So it's still a bit early in the morning after a long evening last night. I enjoyed it really much. And I also again want to extend my congratulations to David. I'm actually put here in a little bit embarrassing situation to have to make a confession about a story 10 years ago, the 50th birthday. This gives you an indication of how David was viewed by his assistant professors at the time. We were invited, Igor Klemenov, Neil Turek and I, at the birthday party. And we had started out with an innocent idea that was also done yesterday of a large birthday character on which everyone would write their names. And we'd done the same thing yesterday, writing our names birthday. David, so we had that idea. And we went to a store on Nassau Street. And we saw this birthday card, and at that moment we were basically hooked, because we saw the birthday card and that was David's birthday card. Because it said something like, birthday, or we imagined it said, David, you are almost perfect. You're smart, you're inspirational, you're charming, you're gracious, you have a great smile, there was a long list of things. And of course, it was not quite the point that all those things were, we really believed that they were all of David, but of course we knew that David wanted to be, and he likes to be flattered, that's really the main main reason for it. But then, of course, when you have these big birthday cards, there's always, when you open it, there's this sentence inside of it. And of course, we were scared what would be in there, and when we saw what was in there, we still had to buy the card, and we bought the card. We had great fun that afternoon. We were preparing a sketch for David, and Igor has many talents. One of his talents is how well he can imitate David. So we had a great afternoon. Towards the end of the afternoon, actually, we got a little bit scared. Our positions at the time were not quite, your position was not quite as secure as it is now. So there was this front of the card and there was the back of the card, and the back of the card basically started with, a whole list of things. And on top of that, there was another thing that had to express our admiration for David. But again, at the end, we actually took a pair of scissors. And we cut out the last sentence, and we put an aluminum foil thing in it. And I'm sure David at the point was surprised just to see that aluminum foil thing in it. So we gave the card without actually I thought I had until this morning, and then I'm still not sure. Those of you who are interested, you can ask me. There's going to be a question period at the end of this talk. This is, I think, an amusing story. I should also say that as a student, I was already started out with studying gauge theory, and was motivated by originally some papers by my private book, looking at gauge theory on torus. And it was as a graduate student, as an undergraduate student, as a senior thesis. And actually, one of the papers that David wrote with Robert Kozanski and is one of the papers from which I learned a lot. It's actually one paper which has not been mentioned, but it's one of the very nice papers. Many very nice papers. So, duality in connection with finite temperature, of course, is a very old concept, and indeed it's an old idea, going back to the days of Clamart and Wannier, that if you can discover a interstitial function of some symmetry between the interchange of some parameters, that it gives a powerful tool for studying the phase structure of that particular system in terms of Wannier situation with the Ising model. Electromagnetic duality, of course, put powerful constraints on it, but it was also an idea by Hope applied to paper one-dimensional gauge theory, where you could define electromagnetic flux by doing twists in the space direction, and electric flux essentially by doing twists in the time direction, but then the Euclidean invariant that interchanges the time direction with the space direction gives you some hint of electromagnetic duality that really constrains the phase structure of the unknown theory. For example, it shows that you cannot have simultaneous magnetic and electrical requirements. So it's a natural question to ask, since we now have a lot of theories that we are obtaining by means of particular limits of M theory, what is really the full new duality group, or the duality group of the decoupled theories that live on the world going into V-brains from what is it? And is it as big as the new duality group of the theory itself, or is it perhaps bigger? And that's what we expected it might be bigger. Decoupling limits of M theory come in all kinds of combinations of letters. The most interesting one is sort of the simplest one where you could start out with, that's the Yarn-Mills theory. And mostly in this talk, I'll be considering, or at least although it must be explicitly, but I'll be considering that mostly the maximally supersymmetric theory would be interesting to expand some of this to a less supersymmetric theory. But, we have gone down a list of all kinds of limits of M theory, the two-commutative theory in six dimensions, generalization of the Yarn-Mills theory, the non-commutative one, the S-dual theory of the non-commutative Yarn-Mills theory, which is the non-commutative open string theory, the little string theory, and finally it was called OM theory, which would incorporate all these other things. But the list might even be longer. The question is, for each of these theories, what's the general way of understanding the symmetries that one would want to be able to extract from its partition function? Now, if you look at the partition function of the theory itself will have general couplings or moduli. It can have certain charges or flux sectors. One of the things that's going to be important in the following is that if you have charges, you can also consider the corresponding grand canonical example, ensemble where you would introduce chemical potentials for each of these charges. And of course, the partition function depends on temperature and the size of the shape and the shape of the volume. And the question is, if we are able to choose a sufficiently global perspective on what these decoupling limits actually are, can we learn a bit about the symmetries of this volume? I'm just going to discuss the simplest non-trivial example. Just to sort of tell you how the game is, what the rules of the game are, and then it should be clear at the end how these things might be generalized to more complicated examples. The simplest non-trivial case is the couple of two-dimensional world shape theory of the B1 plus F1 string, which in the appropriate alpha prime to zero limit would be the two-dimensional Yarn-Mills theory. If you have n B1 ranks, the gauge group is un. But if you have, in addition, F1 strings combined with B1 brains, you also have electric flux in the Yarn-Mills theory, where the electric flux is quantized. There's another decoupling limit, which was considered last year also by various groups. It's the two-dimensional non-commutative string theory, where you essentially do the S-dual construction of that limit. So you take this large string coupling, also alpha prime to zero, but nonetheless, because of the critical electric field, one of the electric strings is finite extent. And in general, this theory can also be labeled by these two integers, where P is the critical electric field, and still we can take the factors of these strings. Now, you could imagine, of course, that there's going to be a whole PQ family, say, or family of decoupling limits. By using S-duality and possibly the full S-Fuzzi S-duality group. So that's the first duality that you may want to include in your list of dualities. And again, we're going to look at the partition function because that's sort of the thing where at least some of these invariants can be stable. Conveniently. And the partition function can also depend on these two integers. On the coupling constant, then I'm going to introduce the axion combined with it. There's the temperature, and there's possibly the finite volume R. And the symmetries of that partition function is the S2S in finance, which permutes the B1 ranks and the F1 B1 strengths and the F1 strengths according to the usual metrics rule, in condition in conjunction the coupling transforms this. The hoped trick of the switch of the time direction with the space direction is also a Euclidean invariance, Macedonian invariance of the two torus that you would consider this thing on. In general, it could be another parameter here, which is basically this angle of the direction, the time direction here, and again you could have this Euclidean Macedonian invariance of the shape of the torus. Okay, there are already some a few questions of an issue that arise when you want to play this game. First, I was a little bit quick with telling you what the definition of this partition function would be. And the question is there a proper UV definition of what that theory is? Since we're considering decoupling units, we don't want to deal with M theory. M theory has gravity, you can have a Jean sensibility. I don't want to consider that at this moment. So it's not entirely obvious that the decoupling limit that I've been discussing really preserves S. That's another question. Another point that's been brought up often is that if you have to fill up fish functions, there's a bounding condition on the fermions. Those bounding conditions break the supersymmetry. So isn't that a point of worry? And the answer to that question is, I would like to give the last question. Once we have taken the decoupling limit, we're just down to a complicated Diamond-Mills theory with some fermions. We consider that on the torus and do the finite temperature. And the torus itself would also have, if you like, anti-periodic bounding conditions for those fermions. The bounding, let's say this way, the supersymmetry, we're not interested in string multiplications that preserve supersymmetry. The low Gaussian theory of the D range would preserve supersymmetry. And the duality symmetries will indeed still act. Even if the supersymmetry is broken, the only thing that you can do is you have improved spin structures. Whatever the bounding print. We're not going to say too much about that later. And we're going to ignore the print on one. So I think the key question which I want to address is, are there more symmetries? And, okay, for those of you who study non-commutative Diamond-Mills theory, you know that there are more symmetries. Framework of non-commutative Diamond-Mills theory, it was already known that there are other symmetries, which is known as the Morita equivalence. And, but for a long time, it wasn't that clear, to some extent, if that Morita equivalence was just a symmetry that acts on the space of gauge fields, which indeed we can construct it on the space of gauge fields. It wasn't that clear if it was also a symmetry of the dynamics of the field. And really, Sargent and Witten, who really clarified that point very carefully, by showing that in the T-duality symmetry of the string theory, by taking a proper decoupling limit, is preserved in the decoupling. So we're going to be able to look find another duality symmetry by looking just at the Euclidean partition function of a 1+1-dimensional Diamond-Mills theory, a 2-dimensional non-commutative Diamond-Mills theory, again with gauge group n. But now we're going to have a magnetic flux m, and a magnetic flux m is not the same as an electric flux e. Magnetic flux M is defined in the Euclidean theory simply by taking the trace over S01, whereas the electric flux is the harmonic, the monocle conjugate of the gauge field, the sort of dual to this number M. And these are the dictionaries of Sargent and Witten. Now we have a well-defined definition, UV definition of that particular function. This partition function also enjoys the T-duality symmetry, that is the Morita equivalence, and follows from the duality of the string theory. And this partition function is now related to the partition function I've been discussing previously, namely a partition function for a fixed and an electric flux by means of both a Fourier transformation, where we integrate over the non-commutivity parameter, and we also sum over the magnetic flux M. And the electric flux is dual to the non-commutivity parameter, and the axion phi is dual to the magnetic flux. And this partition function then will indeed satisfy this as a proof S duality. So we now have two partition functions, that one that has the T duality and this one that has the S duality. question is, can we combine the two things? And obviously, there's a perspective that can help us do it, achieve that. And the perspective is just starting from M theory. Essentially, what I've been discussing is the decoupling limit of 2B string theory on S1. S1, which is the space direction, but I can also do it with finite temperature, so I have the Euclidean S1, which is the time direction. But in going from M theory to string theory, we have an extra circle. So this is M theory on P3, again with some boundary conditions on the fermions. But P3 is just geometric P3. So we should expect, in this case, provided the decoupling limit preserves invariance, we might expect F of 3D. The question is it going to be there? The empty perspective at least makes the following point clear, and people haven't been considering this situation too often, at least in the study of thermodynamics of the deep brain theories, namely that we need to do in order to make the balance most manifest is to introduce also a chemical potential for the rank M of the gauge group. So instead of considering a potential function for a given rank N, we start summing over the potential functions for arbitrary rank N by times the base factor, and this chemical potential is the more potential in this case. The claim that I, or at least the proposal that I would like to make, is present evidence basically that the M-theory picture is going to provide an invariance for that potential function, which is just a two-dimensional potential function, two-dimensional Hamilton theory, but you know, the objective parameter in there, this is simply a beta angle, if you like. That potential function has a pretty large invariance, which is much larger than the u-developing invariance of the two-beam string theory on the circle, namely the u-developing invariance of S of 3C, constant S of 2, and the Euclidean S of 2. So how can we see this? If you go through the dualities and you start with M theory on P3 and you translate it to the 2B string theory, then there's the M theory metric on P3, which tells you what the shape of the three torus is. And then you can translate it back to the 2B theory. Then the M theory metric parameterizes the fields that I've been talking about before. There's a non-commutative parameter B. There's the chemical potential for the rank of the gauge group A, and that's the theta angle time action in the string. As of 2z invariance, we now see here as being that geometric invariance of that part of the torus, that's the S developing invariance. The T developing invariance essentially acts in this part of the matrix, but there's a whole S of 3 invariance that acts in M theory. The shape of the torus of the 2b string theory, the time and the temperature, is given by the flux and the determinant of the three-point flux of M theory and determinant by M. The key point now is the following, that the decoupling limit that's discussed by Sargent and Witten is simply the fact that this determinant, G factor that sits there, is going to be sent to zero. That's the decoupling limit of M theory. But this actually has a universal invariant meaning for this whole 3x3 matrix simply as a statement that this 3x3 matrix will have the determinant equal to zero. It's going to be a general metric, a general 3x3 matrix with the determinant equal to zero. So the SO3C symmetry that acts on this matrix like that still acts after the decoupling limit. And with hindsight, it's not that surprising that the decoupling limit is actually a universally invariant notion. So the main thing that happens after the decoupling limit is that this matrix here will get a null vector. There's no eigenvalue, and the null vector is parameterized by the moduli that's here. So now we want to sort of extract some useful information from this. And the way to do that is to identify of the coefficients in this matrix, what is the physical significance of that. So let's introduce some parameters, and let's look at what that's physical relevances, and then we can look at the T duality and what the physical meaning of the, and the answer to what the physical meaning of working out these are. So there's the parameter, which is this ratio of string yield, open closed string fields, which in the gauge theory has this particular
definition here is G. M. Mills is the M. Mills one-dimensional M. Mills coupling. Delta is the length of non-commutativity. This is the ratio of the temperature. This quantity is turns out to be the ratio of the temperature divided by n units of the string of the gauge coupling. And this other quantity, which is called Z, is the fourth power of the temperature in units of the non-commutativity length. And now the duality symmetries, if you consider the maximal field duality and say the maximal S duality, the field one, the R one or R duality in both directions of the two torus, then the field duality actually interchanges the inverse temperature with the non-commutativity length, the length of the non-commutativity, and the S duality interchanges the Young-Mills, one of the Young-Mills coupling with the non-commutativity. So now there's an obvious game one can try to play is one can look at the phase diagram of the Young-Mills theory, one-dimensional Young-Mills theory, as a function of these parameters and see what can one learn from it by using these symmetry transformations. This is still a little bit of an art, although the main information comes rather immediate. The idea is going to be the following, that this A is dual to N, if you like, because it becomes potential n. So if we take a small, it is essentially corresponding to n large. So let's assume we take n large, where n is in one particular point of the on your moduli space, the number of v1 grains. And if in that point on your moduli space all the couplings are small, then that theory over there should be the one-dimensional Young-Mills theory. And now you can start changing the parameters. And at some point you will get the strong coupling regions, but then you start using the dualities to render onto weak coupling instead of other theories. Since this is a game that I just started, I at this point only going to extract the information that you can write down the information that you can extract from the duality symmetry that I just wrote down. And that's the phase diagram should roughly look like this. Right, that's a corner where the Young-Mills coupling and the non-commutativity is relatively small. Temperature is much like moving high. That's the Young-Mills theory corner. If the temperature gets lower, the Young-Mills coupling gets bigger, you go to a dual regime, which is the metric spin theory regime. However, if the temperature really gets very big and much bigger than a non-commutativity scale, and I should say here, what I'm doing here is I'm increasing the temperature while keeping the shape of the two torus fixed. That's a little bit funny, perhaps, because normally what you would want to do is you want to just increase the temperature while keeping the convection radius fixed, which will actually be squeezing the shape of the two torus. Since the top parameter of the two torus is sort of decoupled from this SLP invariant, it was easy to keep that thing fixed at the moment. In that case, if you increase the temperature, the two torus shrinks, and you want to do a d-duality at some point, which interchanges the d1 branch with the d-1 branch. So that's really what the magnetic flux is measuring. That's the d-1 branch. So you have this phase diagram where you actually get also an IKK feed phase, if you like, at very high temperature. And these theories, these freedom, they live in background fields. So when the coupling starts increasing, you enter into a supergravity regime. And the supergravity solution that we have to write down that connects with the Young-Mills field is the D1 brain supergravity solution with a B field that is more limited. But then you would have all kinds of development transformations that may connect these regions with solutions of supergravity with other quantum numbers. So this is at least how you could get started. And then there are going to be interesting phase boundaries between the Young-Mills theory and the condition for supergravity. And for example, the magnetic spin theory would have a Hadron type, possibly a Hadron type transition, where the magnetic spins essentially start. That's one of these things, actually, this is the NCOS theory, because it's the magnetic spin coupled to the membrane. But one would need to do some more work to finish this phase diagram. But this is what the duality that produces.
What is the radio coordinate?
I'm sorry?
What is the radio coordinate?
I'm just, it seems like radio, but that's actually hexagonal symmetry. And the reason for why I indicated with hexagonal symmetry, these are logarithms of these coordinates. of this quantity. So this logarithm of g of mL over t, so g of mL increases in that direction. The temperature increases like that, but so temperature increases in that direction. And the non-commutativity increases in that, in going up. So this is very non-commutative. This is low temperature, high temperature, and this is small Young-Mills coupling. So it has a exact. So this is the regime where all parameters are big, and no parameters are small. Except that if n is big, you can still be in a supergiant. Okay, so let me wrap up with some conclusions. The conclusion at this point is that there are various possible subtleties connected with the fact that if you do these decoupling theories in finite temperature, you're talking again about the Euclidean partition sum, which you can do for a decoupled theory because you sort of know that it's a field theory. It's much harder to do it for an M theory. So the reasoning here has been a little bit indirect in the sense that although in order to define the Euclidean partition sum, I first have to take the decoupling limits. But then to argue that the decoupled theory has a invariance, I need to go back to M theory and then tell you that, okay, well, in M theory I can first do the duality and then take the decoupling limit and argue that there is invariance. But I think actually the reasoning is sufficiently sound to give, at least we hope that the uniformity symmetry of M theory do descend through the decoupling limit because the decoupling limit can be defined in a uniformity invariant way. It would indeed be a little bit strange if you would have a theory that is decoupled from gravity, but then you take your uniformity transformation, you put on some different classes, you give out a quantum numbers, that the theory would be no longer be decoupled from gravity. So decoupling from gravity should be decoupled from the notion. And that gives a lot of information about the partition. But you get rather strong, but seemingly rather strong things. For example, if you generalize the high-dimensional Young-Mills theory, you can do it rather straightforwardly. You again have this, basically this definition of decoupling limit, which would tell you that the Young-Mills theory is equal to 1, the non-commutative Young-Mills theory, where all the parameters, the theta angles, fluxes, non-commutivity parameters, there are a lot of parameters, has an SL5Z and duality symmetry, and on finite volume actually has even full SL5 or 5Z. U-duality group of N theory on the finite. Now that's a very powerful symmetry because if you predict functions invariant on such a symmetry, you can extract a lot of information from that. Except for the fact that a lot of these parameters bring you from theories that you know pretty well, maybe Young-Mills theory, to theory that perhaps you're not very interested in because they open the limits where now you have given names like NC Young-Mills, NCOS, maybe you have to find one or two other names, but it connects with all kinds of funny theories which are not that interesting in perhaps. But still, one has hoped that some of these symmetries do give you very instructive information. Of course, to complete with the picture, one should like to connect this with research work on the phase structure of the deep room strain volume theories, exactly that our paper, that the papers on the NCOS theories, and that I think is really interesting.
Well, I have to ask, what was on the back of the room this
time? No physics question. I forgot to say actually at the beginning of the talk that I would reserve the right when you would ask that question. Postponing for the 70th birthday. Because at least now this birthday I've made the confession and then okay, there we go. Thank you.
The temperature in New York is being that compensated radio high breaking compactation.
The temperature is a compacted case, is it dual to the compacted case radio in the time right? Okay. But in principle, what we also have fermionic and neutron bound into the fermion of the space vector.
You said the size of the space vector actually was complicated
to the size of the planet? That depends. If you want to have the full SO5, for example, in the D3 band case, if you want to have the full SO5 from 5-0 energy to full 0, you don't have those things comparable. But if you take the large volume limit, then the symmetry gets broken to SO5C. At least that's also a very clear case from the two-dimensional example, because the Z invariance of the U3 indoors, you get the SO3 invariance actually does not care about the shape of the U3. So large volume preserves the SO3.
No further questions. Don't come again.